Well, Aaron Molly, one of my favorite Seeking Excellence guests of all time, and potentially, I think, aside from my wife and some, I had like co-hosts or like part-time hosts before, I think you might be the first person to be on the Seeking Excellence podcast for the third time. So no small feat,
we
but
love that.
How are you doing? Tell us all about your life. I mean, there's been so, I think your first time on here, you were single. So now you're 35 weeks pregnant and married. So not in that order. But anyways, tell us about your life.
Yeah, just a few small changes. Yeah, so much has changed since we've last been on together. I am, yes, married now, 35 weeks pregnant, super excited, having a boy. Go boys, as we
love.
Which
we love. The best.
I am now, last time I was on, I was living in Connecticut as a focus missionary, but now I live in the good old Midwest in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I am a campus minister at Pius High School, which is a Catholic high school here. So, you know, just switch the whole country, switch from college to high school. Now I'm married and pregnant and just doing all the things.
All the things, all the changes, all the transitions. I'm about to have a really big one here with baby boy on the way, which is super, super fun. So we're now getting to the stage. So Jordan is like 9 and a half, almost 10 months. And it's just like, I mean, when they say it just gets better and better, it really does. It's unreal how much fun he is now. His laughing. He's got this like really goofy face he makes all the time now and just like knows we laugh and then he'll laugh back after you're laughing and stuff. And it's just super awesome. So really excited for you guys to hit that new stage.
I can't wait. Your kid is so cute too. Like, I know we can say that about a lot of kids, but you got a cute kid. You guys did good.
Thank you. Thank you. That means a lot. I appreciate that. Well, that's awesome. Well, so glad to have you back. And obviously we got to talk very briefly. I only got to see you guys for a little bit there at Seek. But I think one thing that's beautiful is, I don't know if you know this or not, but I recorded a podcast about missionary support raising last year. And I think it's great to see that we can, and I don't even know how much we agree or disagree on it. And we're not going to talk about, that's not the idea of this podcast, but I just think it's good that, you know, you guys are doing it. We can still be friends, you know, like I doesn't have to burn bridges. I think that's a good example for some people in Denver here, I think could benefit from realizing that we can talk about things and have opposing opinions on certain topics and still be friends. We can still like each other.
Exactly. We love that.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Well, that's great. So you obviously have been reflecting on marriage. You've been married. You're a prayerful woman, discerning, you know, you're deep. I think you're a deep thinker. And so love that you have kind of compiled some of your reflections and thoughts on marriage and what marriage has taught you so far in just 9 short months. And I think that the beginning of it is often the most revealing, you know, and I guess I can't speak too much of like how much you reveal over 50 years. But I think that when you first get into it, especially when you're doing it right, when you're not living together, when you're not doing all these things, like there's so much that changes at once. And I think it just exposes so much about you and so much of the things you thought about yourself. And I think parenting does that even more. You know, I think when I was thinking that I was a patient person before I got married, and then like realizing when you get to the end of your rope, when you're exhausted and the baby's crying constantly, like you start to be like, wow, like I'm a very selfish and impatient and hard-hearted individual. It could be really tough, but yeah, not to steal thunder from your first point, but I would love to hear, you know, just some of your kind of overview thoughts, and then we can kind of maybe just break these down and go kind of line by line at some of your reflections and talk about them.
Yeah, I agree with exactly what you said of how entering marriage, it exposes and it intensifies everything. Again, if you're living well into it and leaning into the reality of what marriage is, it should be like that. It should freak you out. That's like one of that's one of the quotes from Ed and Beth Tree from their book, Good, Messy, and Beautiful. It's about marriage. Yeah. And I just remember reading that. That was one of the points of like, if you're truly considering the reality of marriage and what that call is, it should freak you out, which in the best way possible. But yeah, oh my gosh, it's just been so glorious, so much suffering, so much beauty and joy, and everything is just very abundant. And I think that's why with the first point that I talk about is I would always hear couples and people being like, oh, what, you know, what did you learn when you got married? It's like, I'm selfish. I'm selfish. And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. Okay. I get that I'm selfish, but I mean, it really hits when you're married and you recognize, like, no, I am actually very selfish. And the reality that this life is and never will be just about me. And that that is good news, which I think is right. So countercultural too, because we don't want to hear that. And the world tells us the complete opposite. Yeah, but I think that really reflects, I love JP2's quote about, man cannot find himself unless he is a sincere gift of himself. And that really has hit home as I've been married for these 6 months. So,
yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's so crazy. I mean, we are just conditioned, I think, by society, and I think just the natural, right? Like the natural state of man, the fallen state of man, our natural inclination towards sin just allows us to think that the world does revolve around us and that everything should be our way. And we often think that we're always right and that we always are doing things the right way. And that, our happiness should be prioritized, not just by us, but by everybody else in the world. Right. And this, I think, is unfortunately, it's like only getting worse in society as you see the way we're like, I mean, just constantly cowtailing and basically reforming society for these small minorities, right? These different minority groups. And I don't mean racial minorities exclusively. I mean, minorities in all different types of ways, right? Where everything has to kind of change and cater towards the vocal and loud, kind of the tyranny of the minority that we see so often today. And so those people are not going to be ready to be married, right? Anytime soon. I think so many times we see people going out of college and they're just like nowhere close to feeling like they're ready for marriage. Which I think is an interesting thing, right? And I'd love to hear your thoughts about this, of like how you felt like you got to a point where you felt like you yourself were ready for marriage. Because I know that obviously we both had conversion stories. If I remember yours correctly, like your conversion was throughout college, which is, you know, I think is somewhat late for all of us. I had my conversion at heart through college as well. And it'd be best if we were formed, you know, in middle school and high school to be good, virtuous young men and women, and then we'd be much more ready for marriage. And I think that's something that our at least engaged Catholic generation is really thinking about, of like, how can we raise our kids to be good spouses, to be good husbands and wives, fathers and mothers. But we weren't raised that way. A lot of us were just raised to be good professionally, to go to good colleges, to get good jobs. But vocation, marriage, parenthood was not on the list of priorities for our parents a lot of the time. So it's always a tough balance, because I think thinking about, are you ready for marriage? In a certain sense, nobody ever really is, right? You're never going to be perfect and just roll right into it and crush it. But at the same time, you've met some people that you're like, you should not get married right now, you know? Yes. So tell me a little bit about that maybe beforehand, of just like, what made you feel like, okay, you know, we are, both of you, for both you and your husband, of like, we are ready to get married.
Yeah, great question. It is crazy the mindset shift that I've come to from what I used to think marriage was growing up and now, which again, it's because I met Jesus and I came to know myself, not to say that in a fluffy way, but that, yeah, that's the reality. He has made marriage, and it's not a man-made thing. It's a God-made, it's a God-made gift. So I think that shift for me from it being super emotional based and thinking that was the secret to love and that was the secret to marriage, to it actually being a choice and a sacrifice and just the beauty. I mean, the more that I unraveled and dove into why the Lord made marriage and like why it's a sacrament and why it is a very good thing that's going to sanctify you for heaven, and that not just be something that sounded nice. Yeah, it just rocked my world in so many ways. And like you said, it's not, that is such an interesting thing. No one is truly, there's not like, systems that are like forming us to be married and like human formation and what that actually means. It's not even questions that I thought about growing up, like you said, of preparing for a career and preparing to make money and status and all those things. And relationships were always just emotional. It was like, oh, this will be easy. Love is, you know, love is easy. It makes you feel good. It shouldn't be that hard. Yeah. Sunshine and rainbows. And that's what marriage is going to be. But it's, it's so far from that in a good way. And I think the way of that, I came to terms with knowing that I wanted to get married, and same with my husband, was it truly boils down to choice. And yeah, just really allowing the Lord to break down lies that I believed about what it means to be good and what it means to be married is kind of how we started arriving at what the vocation of marriage is and why we would even want to choose it with each other. So not trying to make that sound more heady, but I think just reiterating, like, the secret was not because it was an emotion. It's because it was a choice, and yeah, choosing that and allowing someone into my heart like that too, someone that really resonated Jesus for me and just could love me unconditionally. There's a huge shift of conditional to unconditional love that I could just go in about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think what I drew out of your answer there, and where I think you kind of hit something that I might use for the rest of my life, is I think that you could maybe argue that somebody is ready to get married, at least sufficiently, when they understand what marriage is. Mm-hmm. You know, is how I would kind of summarize what you said. And I think you used a lot of words to say, but I think you needed all those words, and I needed all of them too. Like, I think we discovered it along that journey. Because I hadn't really thought about it before. I've never really thought about that question myself. And I think that's it. I think once you understand what it is, you have to understand first and foremost what you're saying yes to. And marriage prep can do that. Marriage prep oftentimes does not do that, but it can, mm-hmm. right? And it is the goal of it, I think, to really tell people what you're committing to and what this really is. Because that has to be at least the fundamental, you know, benchmark or like baseline of, when do I know that I'm ready? It's when you have a firm understanding of what you're actually going to do, right? Like, when am I ready to go out mm-hmm. and actually play football? Like, you need to understand the rules, the role of your position and all of that, right? Like, if you're going to do anything, you have to have at least a solid understanding of what it is you're going to go do, especially if you're going to commit to it for life. And it's going to be life or death in many ways, you know? The things we Absolutely. Do in marriage is our primary vocation. It's our primary kind of vehicle to getting to heaven. So I'd say it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. And I think that's why it's so sideways in society too, is that there isn't an understanding. And it's so sad how much ends in divorce and division and just a lack of love and sin. It's because there's fundamentally, I think, a lot of people don't understand what marriage is. And if they did, there would be such a greater chance and such a greater fidelity, I think, to the sacrament of marriage. But our world just waters it down so much and gives us the candy version of it, and it doesn't benefit anyone.
No, I think that's really great. And so I love your kind of reflection here on the vows. So the aspect of like the mm-hmm. actual wedding ceremony, obviously gearing up towards it, you're thinking about just how serious it is. But I loved your reflection. I don't want to steal any of your thunder here, but tell us a little bit about just what that was like and what made it so special, and just what you think now looking back on like the moment of exchanging your vows.
Mm-hmm. When I think of my wedding day, that's the first moment that comes up, and the most profound moment for me, certainly, not just because the words that were being said, but there is a whole like body soul reality that was happening of what it means to vow your life to someone, to say, I, Aaron, take you, Connor, to be my husband. Like, what does that mean to like take you? And I promise to be true to you in good times and in bad, in sickness and in health. I'll love you and honor you all the days of my life. Oh, we hear it in movies, but the intensity of those words while being in front of God in the sacrament of marriage in the church, like, it's just unreal. It's just unreal. And I had never, with my story, a lot of my story is relationships and broken relationships with men and truly loving people conditionally. And that was my first time being able to unconditionally say, with all of me, I choose you and I choose to give myself to you for the rest of my life. And I was choking back my vows because it was so profound.
Yeah, that's amazing. It is really crazy. I mean, to think about the unconditional love aspect of, you know, when you think about unconditional love, I think most of the time we think of the parent-child relationship, which is mm-hmm. also kind of sad, right? Because the first thing we should think about is marriage. But I think it just like so naturally, the only place that for many of us we ever experience it is in the, you know, in the parent-child relationship. And so that's kind of the primary place we experience it. And so you never think about actually choosing somebody for it, right? Because so often when we think about being a mother or a father, when you hear about the love, and I think this is true, that like when they come out of the womb, even now for you, I think you already experienced that, right? Where you just like love this child no matter what, no matter what they do, you're like, we'll never abandon you. Like it's so beautiful. And you feel that just so initially, but it's crazy to think about like you and Connor, Emily and I, like, we were once strangers, and now you have chosen this person to love unconditionally and commit the rest of your life to. That is a powerful experience, to have no relation, right, to this person, and they're just a total stranger, and then eventually you're like, I will lay down my entire life for you. It's wild.
Yeah. It is absolutely crazy. Like, it, that's like, yeah, marriage is, it's no joke. It really is no joke. And it's not something to be taken lightly, and vows are not to be taken lightly. And that right. commitment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't underestimate it. There's, and then I think going on, you know, you have a really good point here of love being a daily choice, and that it would never be real if it wasn't hard. And I want to read this quote that I found. I actually had a friend of mine send it to me the other day, and I love me some C.S. Lewis. And this is fairly long, but it's really, really beautiful. So it's talking about the headship of husbands, which is a topic I like to talk about somewhat frequently, but it kind of gets into this like suffering and the difficult aspect of marriage, right? So it says, this quote from C.S. Lewis is from The Four Loves. C.S. Lewis writes, "This headship then is most fully embodied, not in the husband we should all wish to be, but in him whose marriage is most like a crucifixion, whose wife receives most and gives least, is most unworthy of him, is in her own mere nature least lovable. For the church has no beauty but what the bridegroom gives her. He does not find, but makes her lovely. The chrism of this terrible coronation is to be seen not in the joys of any man's marriage, but in its sorrows, in the sickness and sufferings of a good wife or the faults of a bad one." And I just, man, it's so powerful, but I think it goes both ways, right? He's obviously in that moment talking about the headship of the husband and Christ and the church. But I think in both ways, you think about that, like the beauty of marriage, which you, I think what you're explaining here is that the beauty of true authentic love is that it's not when it's easy, right? Even Christ talks about this in loving our enemies. He says that even evil people love their friends, right? Mm-hmm. Like anybody can love their friends. And the same thing goes for if you're going to be an amazing husband or an amazing wife, just like if you're going to be a great Christian, you have to love when it's hard to love. Anybody can love when it's easy. And I've seen this in my own life so many times. There's so many different Catholics and Christians that I know that like you stay in your Catholic bubble, you have your friends that all agree with you and believe the things you believe. And then as soon as somebody else comes in and challenges that or somebody's difficult, then it's like, there's no patience. There's no love, right? There's no compassion. And it's like, that's a gauge of where you're at, right? it's not yeah. a good sign if that's what happens to you. But I think the same thing can go for marriage, that if we only choose to love this person when it's easy to, right? During the honeymoon and other times, when they're on their best behavior, when they're doing the things we love, then you're not being a very good spouse.
Yeah, not at all. And that, again, it's another twisted thing that we think, as humans in our society, of that it is supposed to be easy and you're supposed to make me feel good. And it's right. like the source and summit of love in marriage, this image that came up for me in prayer is, I'm handing you the hammer to nail me to the cross. And am I willing to like let you do that and let me be pinned down to the cross and be crucified? Because if you're not willing to do that, then you're not going to experience love in its fullness. That is the crucifixion. That's the image that Jesus gives us. It's not like resurrected Jesus that we see everywhere, or like happy sunshine, hippie Jesus. It is Jesus crucified to a cross. And we would be foolish to not think that is precisely where he wants us to be in the ways that we love others, especially your spouse. So that's like the biggest beckoning. That's the biggest call is, are you willing to hurt and get hurt? Are you willing to allow someone to get so freaking comfy in your heart and be so intimate, but also cut you the deepest, like more deep than anyone else? That is marriage. Yeah. I heard that from a dad at one of my friend's wedding, Cynthia. That's what her dad said. He was like, marriage is letting someone love you better than anyone else and letting them cut you deeper than anyone else, which is like, whoa. Yeah, that's real deal.
Yeah. That part doesn't sound as fun.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I don't want that.
It's so wild. But I think, you know, when you look at it that way too, and this again goes into that proper understanding of what marriage is, right? Because when you have that understanding of, oh, this is supposed to be difficult. Oh, this is, I'm supposed to actually step up and engage more when it's challenging, when we don't get along, when she's not doing or he's not doing the things that I want him to do, or he's doing things that I don't want him to do. That's actually the part that I'm supposed to be like more attuned to. And to me, the only way to do that is to have a prayer life, right? When you have a prayer life, mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest benefits whenever I'm talking about prayer, thinking about it, I'm just like, one of the number one benefits, or at least fruits of it, I think fruits and benefits are, you know, synonymous, but one of the biggest benefits of having a prayer life is you just kind of become more conscious, right? You can kind of see people who are just kind of like unconscious going through life, mm-hmm. and they're just like on autopilot, and they just like give into their every, you know, desire, and they just kind of run on instinct rather than actually being conscious, rational humans, you know? And that's what we're called to cultivate. And I think prayer does that better than anything else. That allows you to, when I'm in these difficult moments, when I feel the heat rising in my anger, in my, you know, my love tanks drained, like I actually have an awareness there where I can more clearly choose. Because life is all about, you know, making a million choices a day. And I think trying to get the majority of them, you know, and increase the percentage of right choices that you're making over time. But when you have a strong prayer life, you're able to actually lock in and be more aware and make a more conscious choice rather than feeling like you're just running on instinct and doing whatever feels right, or, you know, fight or flight mode constantly. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because we can't be self-reliant either. That's never going to work in marriage either. And if you don't, I don't know how people do it without a prayer life, honestly. And yeah. I'm so grateful the Lord makes it divorced. Yeah, I know. And it's so sad because it's like, gosh, if only you knew. And yeah, the Lord makes it abundantly clear on the days where I don't make time for prayer. I am not a charitable person. It's super clear that I have no capacity to yep. choose my husband the way he needs to be chosen, which I'm so thankful for the starkness. But I mean, we need God. And fundamentally, I mean, that comes back to everything fundamentally. It's if you don't know that you need God, then none of this matters or is going to make sense. If you don't yeah. come to an understanding of your neediness and dependence on the Lord and how he completes you and sustains and fulfills your life, and that not just be something that sounds nice, like there's none of it. Yeah. Who cares? Like, make your own reality.
Yep.
So yeah, prayer life is 100% the way to allow your marriage to be sustained.
Yeah. It's super fundamental. That's awesome. I love it. And I think that kind of goes back to two, making the daily choice where we have to make the daily choice to choose our spouse, but also to choose God. And each day we, yes. you know, very similarly, where we make the choice every day, whether I'm going to try to follow the Lord and his will for my life, or if I'm just going to try to do my own thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So point number four, you said that love is willing the good of the other, oftentimes at the cost of your own preferences. And yeah, I would love to talk about that a little bit, because I think that that is so real. You have just so frequently, you know, you just feel like you're dying to yourself. And I think it's what's really been hard for me at times is trying to find the balance of, you're not necessarily supposed to get into marriage and just like totally lose any, like never get your way, right? That's not necessarily the best way to do it either. Yeah, you have people that kind of, I think, just do that. They have very controlling spouses and they're kind of more passive themselves. And so they kind of just fall into this, like, I just let this person kind of do whatever. I think there's a lot of times, not always this way, you have it in both directions, but I think the caricature, at least, of marriage recently has been like the dominating mom and the kind of passive husband that just, you know, eventually just checks out, right? Because he just doesn't feel like he has any influence in what happens in the family. But it is just so hard to try to strike that balance. What has that journey kind of been like for you of trying to strike the balance of not, you know, never getting in your way, but also yielding at times?
Yes, very hard. Very hard. And yeah, like I say in the notes, I truly beg for humility every day because it is so sanctifying. And you just don't realize how much you are fixated on what you want in your way. And yes, it is good and necessary for me to share the part, like the needs of my heart. Like, I do need things from my husband, and I have to vocalize that to him and not expect him to read my mind, which is another point and what I've reflected on. But also with that too, there's so many smaller things that I am being called to surrender versus getting fixated on that I want it my way. And I think that's even just a greater reality in motherhood too. I know I haven't had my child yet, but you're already dying to, like, yeah, my body's limited. You become limited in so many in so many ways that I wasn't before. And it is a total death to self in not a daunting way, but that is where you become more alive. And love, yeah, love is willing the good of the other. You're not going to, when you show up at heaven, you're not going to be judged on how other people loved you. Like God's going to speak to you about how did you choose these people in your life, right, and bring them to heaven, especially your spouse. And that's something my husband says all the time to me. And woof, I mean, that's a, yeah, you're right. Like,
yeah.
Other people can suck at doing things, but it comes down to what you're doing to give yourself to someone else.
That's exactly right. That just kind of gave me the image of like your rubric, or what was it called in college? Like your first day, they call it the, where you basically go over, is it rubric?
Yeah.
No, there's a different word for it.
Itinerary. Oh no, wait, no. Oh, schedule.
There's like the, blank day. They kind of call it. I can't remember what it's called, but
why am I know what you're trying to say.
Well, you're at least 35 weeks pregnant and pregnancy brain is real. So I'm just an idiot. So at least you have an excuse, but whatever it's called. Syllabus day. Wow.
There it is.
Way to go. I'm proud of you. So syllabus day. When you have the syllabus, I think that's kind of what we're talking about, right? Is there's almost like this, when you get your syllabus, one of the best things you turn to, you want to know is like, okay, the final paper is 60% of my grade. And I think that we don't have like exact percentages like that. So I don't want to break anything down and speak for God, but you can kind of get a feel for like 50% of your grade or 60%, some very heavy percentage is going to be how you... your marriage, right? Like, how are you with your spouse? Next one is like with your kids that were entrusted to you. How'd you do there? And then you have like your vocation, your little v vocation, right? If you know, whatever that may be. And then you have like loving other people, loving them, the least vulnerable or the most vulnerable, and all these different categories, right? There's going to be different things, but God kind of taking a look at that. And I think it's good for us to understand that like your primary vocation is going to be a bulk of your grade. And I think the other good point that you made there is that how other people treated you or what other people did to piss you off or whatever, that's 0%, right? So like, I mean, everything's taken into account, right? I think like God is just, so he takes things into context, where you were born, your upbringing, all these different things. But ultimately, you're graded for what you did. You're going to be staying there reporting on the things that you did or didn't do, right? That you said or didn't say. And that's really important to remember. I think that like, I have to choose this other person, and this is what pleases God. And it's also what's going to make me holier. And I think for a lot of people too, you have to understand that that it gets easier over time, right? I think that like if you're growing in grace, if you're growing closer to God and you're choosing to love your spouse, even if that spouse is very difficult to love, it does eventually, you're growing in virtue, right? So your capacity for love, your capacity for patience, your capacity for humility continues to grow and expand.
Yes. And that part, it's, the places of your spouse that are hardest to love are the reason that you're going to be a saint. Like those, it's not going to be the places that are easy. And this is, I love how, there's this book called Rooted in Love. It's about St. Louis and Zelie Martin, married saints. And they have St. Therese of Lisieux. Like they did pretty well. Their girls are like went to the convent. In that book, they say the daughter that brought like sanctified them the most and is the reasons why they believe they're canonized saints was their most difficult child. Was the child that was making every day very hard for different reasons. And that just rocked my world when I read that, because like it wasn't the Saint Therese of Lisieux that we know. It was her other sister who like really pressed into her parents,
right.
and I know parents, everyone probably has those kids, has that spouse, like we all do, is us in some capacity. Like I know I sanctify my husband, that I know there's days I drive him nuts and like that I am annoying, and I could like, you know, like all the things, and we don't have to be like shamed of that. It's funny because I'll joke with them. I'm like, oh, you're welcome. I'm preparing you for heaven. So, but it's true. There's so much truth to that.
That's so awesome. I love it. No, I think it's right. And I think it really points back to that C.S. Lewis quote that I read, you know, of like, when you're mirroring Christ the most is when you're suffering the most. And we're never going to suffer to the way that he did. But I think the same thing, that analogy, obviously, that C.S. Lewis is giving is between the husband and wife, the husband to the wife, because it's most fitting to think about it from the perspective of Christ to the church, which that relationship represents. But then you also have that, I think, with parenting, it's obviously very clear as well. Like you are either mother church or you are representing God the Father, or you're representing, you know, kind of the, example of Mary to the child. And so like Mary and God the Father, like they deal with us all the time, right? We're just constantly difficult, constantly not doing what they ask us to do, constantly going our own way and hurting ourselves and rushing off into, you know, pain and wounds and all kinds of stuff that they don't want to see. And they can't, you know, sometimes probably comprehend how crazy we act. And it just doesn't make sense. And it's just difficult. But that's what refines you to more perfectly love like God the Father, or as Mary loves us, right? As Mary loves all her children. So yeah, mm-hmm. It sucks that that's the way. It's just the same thing like when you learn about virtues, right? I remember this from like philosophy in college of being like, and like moral theology, where it's like, if you're going to grow in humility, like you have to be humbled. If you're going to grow in patience, yeah. You have to have your patience tested. Just like working out, yes. You know this, right? You're an athlete. And if you're going to get stronger, you have to break your muscles.
Yep. And we start praying for that. And then all those things start happening. We're like, oh, what's happening?
Call it.
And it's like, yeah it's like that's how you grow, actually.
Yep, that's exactly right. And so mm-hmm. I know another thing you talked about here is it's just kind of a renewed love for saving yourself for marriage, or, you know, mm-hmm. recommitting yourself to purity before marriage, after, you know, getting into marriage. And obviously you've procreated and created the human, which I think is the, you know, pinnacle of understanding the marital act, is like when you actually get to see and experience two becoming one, you know, the husband and wife becoming one in the child. I think like that miracle and experience just helps you to understand sex and procreation in such a deeper way, right? When you can see the beauty of life, that like a miracle happens as a result of this act. And it's not meant to just be some throwaway blacked out experience, but actually meant to be within the context of the sacrament. So tell me more about, just your thoughts on that. I know you said hit me up because you could write a whole book on that topic. So tell us some of your thoughts.
Oh my gosh, I truly could write a whole book on this. This is probably, sex is probably one of the most passionate things I talk about. And I think this redemption that has happened from being married, and the reality that sex is one of the most sacred things the Lord has ever made. And some people would be like, why the heck would you like ever say that in such like a, I think high school Erin would say that if she heard me saying that, being like, what do you, what? but shook. That it is... Yeah, she's like, please stop talking. But that is it. There is something so sacred and divine about it that our world just does not know. Again, a very candy version, watered down approach of what it is. And there has just been such a beautiful reality being pregnant and being married, and that there's life growing inside of me, that this is what it was made for. Like, it's mm-hmm. There's something so beautiful, like the fact that it can make a whole human being, like love in itself. You can give yourself so entirely to someone that it makes a human being. It's not something to play around with. Like, it's not casual. Like, it's not just something you do with anyone, or which is how I grew up. It's like it was more of a casual thing, or even just desiring that, it was still, there is such a misunderstanding of what that was. And I was like, oh, I'll just be a good Catholic when I get married. Like, I'm living in sexual sin. I was living in sexual sin for years and years and years, and was so just enslaved in many ways with that. But it's like now being married and having life, it has just redeemed so many of those places of my heart. And love, just love talking to women about that, of do you truly know, and men, but it's like, do you truly know how good you are and how sacred your body is, and what you do with your body? What you do with your body matters a lot.
So that's the fundamental sentence, I think, there, because so many times we don't think that that's true, right? That what we do with our body doesn't matter, doesn't impact our soul, doesn't impact anything else. It's really beautiful. It's amazing to think about that. And I think when I started to understand just even the Trinitarian example of the family, right? We call the family the domestic church. We see that, as I said, like the two becoming one. Like, I remember that was like a recent thing in the last year or so that I think I heard somebody talk about that, of like the two become one, yes, mystically together, but also kind of like in a like practical sense, you know, through the child. Like, you guys, you know, like Jordan has her eyes, my smile, or whatever it might be, like they truly are like this mixture of the two of you, which is just unreal and super incredible to think about that. And then to think about like the book of Genesis, right? To think about the creation of the world and that God had this plan and he created man and then he created woman. And since then, like his new plan for creating new people was this, right? It was a sexual act.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be within the context of marriage. Like that's a pretty big deal. Like you think about how big it is in the book of Genesis when he created Adam and Eve, like it continues to be a massive deal and we get to participate in it. He loves us so much that he's like, you know what? This was super dope. I'm going to let you guys partake in it, you know, because it's just such a great time that you guys now actually, I'm going to let you guys kind of have in on it and make it pretty awesome for you. And so, yeah, it's super cool. I love thinking about it. And I think it is just something that, I mean, yeah, waiting for marriage, I think it's just not promoted enough. People don't understand mm-hmm. the value behind it, why we do this, why we deny ourselves for it. And you just can't understand the, yeah, just the absolute holiness. And I think the grace in it and all of that stuff that can come from that is really amazing. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's such a precious gift to honor and reverence. And even if you have like fallen into sexual sin now, for like listeners of recommitting to purity. There's a time in my life where I totally, recommitted to purity and changed everything for me, like changed so much of how I saw myself and my beauty and goodness and all the things. And now being on the other side, what the definition of sex is now for me versus back then, it's so much more fulfilling and just rich. Like, I think that it's just rich. And there's just so much pain on the, this is more personal, just like the memories of giving myself to men and just the shame and like not wanting to be pregnant. Like those, like the real moments of just fear of like, oh, am I pregnant now? Like, am I, and all the like contraceptive and all the things, just the pain where it's like, oh, that little Erin had no idea what she was denying herself in that moment. She had no clue. And this openness to life now and rejoicing and being so happy, like about finding out I'm pregnant. It's like, oh, very different. You can't. Yeah, it's so incredible. And then,
do you think, and when you experience both of those, do you think there's a better way to bring a child in the world? Or do you think that they're equivalent to each other? Right, of just like absolute stress, and I hope I'm not pregnant. What am I going to do? To now rejoicing and like hoping to get pregnant. Like, is there a difference in there? You know, like are those experiences slightly different than one another? I would say yes.
Yeah, exactly. Huge difference. So that's just been incredible, and even as a woman too, how much it's redeemed me. Like, of that, there's life growing inside of me. I now have to look at the truth of how beautiful and good God actually believes I am, and that I am very precious to him, and that my body is sacred and a gift, which there's so many lies like trapped in that you just can't deny anymore when you have a life growing inside of you. So yeah, so
that's
good.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. It's so good. And so I loved your next one. So I recently did I had an Instagram reel that was similar to this. It talked about this quote from a podcast that I heard recently that was, let me see if I can remember it correctly without looking it up. It was like, unexpressed expectations are premeditated resentment. That's what it was.
Ooh.
Unexpressed expectations are premeditated resentment. So your next point here being about, you put it really well too, I think, a great sabotage to loving your spouse well is projecting your internalized expectations onto them and being disappointed when they don't read your mind. Man, I think, that's why I love the quote so much of talking about like premeditated resentment. Like you're literally, when you have expectations that you haven't expressed to your spouse, what you're essentially doing is you're making in that moment when you're saying like, I wish she would do this, or I wish she would do that, and I would love to see the person do this, and I'm so mad that they never do this or that, or I'm so mad that they do this or that, right? When they're starting to violate it in that way by either actively or passively. You're literally setting yourself up for, if they don't guess and read your mind somehow, then you're like planning to resent them, right? Because you're already setting them up for failure for that resentment to happen, right? So it literally is like this kind of premeditated murder of the, your view and your respect and your love for your spouse. And not a full murder of it, but a little bit, you're chipping away and you're chipping away a little bit day by day because you're unwilling. And I think this is something that's really important people don't understand enough. is that you are unwilling to express your expectations, your wants, and your needs to your spouse. Not that your spouse necessarily is unwilling to do the things you ask them to do. If you've expressed it, you've talked about it, you've agreed on it, and they're not doing it, that's an accountability thing rather than an unexpressed expectation. But when you haven't said anything, like, you're the one that is unwilling to express what you want your spouse to do, and therefore you're setting them up for failure, but blaming them, which is just a toxic mess.
Yeah, it all goes downhill. It's just a big spiral. And it's, oh my gosh, I didn't realize how much I self-sabotaged myself with the expectations that I had in my head, and really had to pray through that, like self-sabotage of, oh, okay, this is what I'm believing. I'm going to actually do things now to confirm that you hate me. Meanwhile, my husband's just like, has no idea why I'm off or like mad about what's happening. And is just totally in the dark about it, which is, it's just so unfair. It's so unfair. And again, it takes so much humility to sift through your own heart, which is often the case. It's just so much easier to blame someone. It's so much easier to just place blame on someone else or mitigate your pain in that way and not be like, oh, what's going wrong in my heart? Like, where am I failing to see what is happening, to see like what wound might be getting hit, or why am I being passive in this, or what is the fear behind this? Mm-hmm. It's easy to avoid and run, but yeah, it's totally not fair to your spouse when you do things like this.
Well, you keep it all inside. And yeah, I think the self-sabotage is such a good point, because I've had so many people in my life and have done this myself for sure. But you kind of, yeah, you start to live out what you are, the story you're telling yourself, right? And so I think a lot of times when you have expectations that aren't met, you start to think like, oh, this person hates me, or he's intentionally or she's intentionally trying to make me unhappy. She knows, right? Even though I never expressed it, she knows what would make me happy, but I'm not going to say it. And she's intentionally not doing, or she's intentionally doing things that make me unhappy. And so because of that, either I'm going to confirm that they don't like me by acting really unlikable, or I'm going to, you know, similarly, start to do things to kind of counteract it, or to counterattack, right? To start to withhold things that I know that they like, or do things that I know piss them off. And then, yeah, you're acting unlikable, and they're going to continue to, or at least start to consciously start to piss you off, because now you have this kind of battle going that nobody's speaking about, but you're both kind of making the other person resent the other. And I think I've had that just so many times. Like, I've talked about my example I've always given is like family members in the past who would want me to call them more often. And then by the time I would call them, they'd be so mad that I hadn't called them for a while. They would start to be frustrated and difficult and unhappy and unpleasant on the phone. And I'm like, well, this is why I don't want to call, you know, it's like, you're doing this, like this just makes it worse. And I often talk to people about like, you have to have an approach that allows you to get what you want. And if you're trying to get what you want, then you have to be kind of mindful and strategic about that, right? And this goes back to the very first point we made about like, life doesn't always revolve around you. And so not everybody's constantly prioritizing thinking about your happiness. So there is almost this strategy of like the selfless act. Selflessness begets selflessness, right? Virtue begets virtue. So if when you're acting loving and self-giving, you're not always going to have that reciprocated. And when you're not and you're suffering, then I think it's a good time to draw close to Christ. But when you are, you'll be surprised sometimes at how much it actually does start to come back around, right?
Yeah, totally. We'll harden our hearts. We'll build all these walls and protect ourselves, manipulate, do the things now, and try to find love in other places too. When in that moment, it's like, if I upset my husband, he has two choices there of either A, yeah, she's like crazy and trying to hurt me, or B, actually calling back the reality that, yeah, my wife does love me. And what she's doing right now, although it's frustrating me or hurting me, that she is trying her best right now to love me and choose me. And that has been so essential for my marriage, and just calling that to mind, whether it's him hurting me or me hurting him, of in that moment where there's so many emotions and your whole limbic system is trying to take off, of being like, what is truth? Like, the truth is you vowed your life to me. Going back to the other point, you vowed your life to me and you meant that. And when you claim that and like, it's like, God, please take care of this. I mean, things change. They really do.
100%. And I think that leads into the next point that I wanted to talk about, which I really loved, is you said here that your healing directly impacts how well you can love your husband and future family, that the healing journey doesn't stop at the altar. And so I think that's really important too. Two parts to that. But let's talk about that first part for a second. I think our last podcast, if I'm not mistaken, the second one was on healing, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That we talked about. It's kind of our main topic. But yeah, tell us a little bit, you know, recap a little bit about like your healing journey and how you've seen that, you know, creeping back up, maybe a lack of healing, or how your healing has allowed you to love your husband.
Yes. Healing is, I was just talking about this. I gave a talk not too long ago about how healing was such a buzzword for me. And I just thought it was this Catholic buzzword that people talked about and that it didn't really matter. And it was just fluffy. And I was like, I don't really need that. And I'm fine. And we as humans just love saying that of I'm fine. Everything's good. My life isn't that bad, et cetera, et cetera. But when I actually started taking my healing journey seriously, and the more I've become attuned to my heart, it actually allows me to love my husband well. It's the more that I know what is happening in my heart, what wounds or experiences are triggering certain things, how the Lord has specifically made my heart. It's just allowed me to choose my husband and be more understanding. And same with him. Like, the more we both have prioritized this, it allows us to love each other more freely. It allows you to love the people around you more freely. So that has certainly been a challenge, because it is intensified when you go into marriage. It doesn't, like I said, it doesn't stop on the altar. It's intensified. It's exposed. There's more of a demand on it, but wow, how beautiful, for the sake of love. Like, it's all for the sake of love. So yeah, it's worth fighting for. And I tell people that again and again, to just continue to seek and be curious about what is happening in your heart. What makes you tick? What makes you hurt? What are your deepest fears and wounds? Because the more you can actually bring that to the Lord and let him heal that and fill that, the more you are free to love your spouse.
Yep. That's exactly right. I think, yeah, it's amazing to see how much that really impacts, because I think that when I was getting ready or thinking about getting married, right, I knew that like, if I don't get my ish together a little bit, right, if I don't actually allow the Lord to like work in my heart, I'm going to carry a lot of this mess into my marriage or into my being a father. And I didn't want to do that. And so I feel like I went through a lot, but I think, you know, as you mentioned, like, it just, you get so much more exposed during, which talk, you know, kind of leads into your second point about how healing continues through marriage. And so can you talk a little bit about if you've had any experience with your husband, or even just with God, your relationship with God, or, you know, therapy or friends or whatever, like, how has, you know, healing continued to happen as a married person?
Yeah. I mean, I think truly just like the choice of my husband choosing me every day is healing in itself. Of on my good, bad, and ugly days, which is, yeah, my next point on here is that we both do this for each other. It's not, we aren't choosing each other because we're wooing each other and just make each other feel good. It is a complete entrustment of ourselves to the other person on those good, bad, and ugly days to love and care for each other. So that in itself, I mean, that's always been healing in my relationship and through engagement, but now really in marriage, where there is no back burner. There is no, like, we're getting out of this. There is no, it is such an unconditional love that has totally, yeah, changed my heart and allows me to see my goodness super clearly. So that fight of it, I'm still in counseling. I love counseling. I think it's the best thing ever. Doing counseling for myself, we have like joint sessions, which I think people like freak out to sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
We share with people. They're like, are you guys okay? Like, are you
getting divorced next week?
Yeah, I know. It's like, no, it's everything's fine. Like, it's a very,
it's okay,
good
to get
thing
some help to, even before things are off. It's actually not a bad strategy.
Amen.
Yeah.
Being proactive rather than reactive. So that's been such a gift, and surrounding yourself with good, wholesome people who are going to challenge you in this place and actually like help you see the ins and outs of your heart. So the sacraments, obviously nothing beats the sacraments of confession and receiving the Lord every day. That is so healing. A prayer life, like, I can't operate well when I'm not praying a holy hour every day. So there's just so many parts with healing that are necessary, and it's a continued journey. It's not overnight either. And I think that's what we often like and want as humans, because we just want it to be like over. We just want to arrive at the summit of I've conquered everything, and that's not true. But yeah, it just gives you opportunities to be loved. So yeah, huge fan.
100%. I love it. Yeah, I think, you know, therapy can be similar to going to the doctor, right? I always love the kind of analogies of like you go to the doctor even when you're not deathly ill. And I think sometimes people go to marriage counseling similar to like having cancer. I don't think any marriage is necessarily beyond saving, but sometimes they do go pretty deep, right? When the cancer is like pretty serious and they're like trying to get help. And I think sometimes we should look at therapy as like going to see a nutritionist. Like even if you're healthy, like a nutritionist can help you to be even healthier, right? Like a fitness coach can help you to even improve upon, even if you're already in decent shape, can help you to get into great shape. And so it doesn't have to be a, you know, we only go to see him when we have cancer. Like it could be a tune up, you know, and like a good to great kind of practice as well.
I love that. That's well said.
Yeah. And I was just looking it up. That's what I was doing for a second there. Our last episode was called Next Level Self-Care. And it's one of our top 20 episodes of all time. So lots of people listen to it. So if you're interested in learning more about Aaron's wonderful insights on healing, that was really good. It's one of my favorite episodes. I still remember recording it. Yeah, so that's fun. Well, awesome. Well, I think, you know, this has been wonderful. I want to see, you know, obviously we got through like half of your list. And so I want to give you time now. If you have any one of them that you still want to hit on that you think is super important to touch on before we close things out.
Yeah. Thank you for going through all this. This is great.
Yeah, it's been so fun.
I'd say the last point of where I find myself now in marriage and 6 months into this storyline is that the plans of our lives will never, ever come remotely close to outdoing God's plan for us. And that this marriage and storyline that I live now is not what little Aaron had planned for her. And I'm just so grateful for God's intervention and divine abundance in that and his providence. So yeah, that has been such a gift and treasure of being a wife, a mom, just a woman. So there's just been such an awakening of who the Lord has made me to be. And it's just been super glorious. So yeah, all that to say, I think the takeaway would be surrendering what you think is good for your life, because you have no clue what God wants to bless you with.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's beautiful. I think it's so real and it can be so different. And I mean, yeah, I think both of us, right? Like you would have never guessed you'd be living in Lincoln, doing things you're doing, being where you're at. Yeah. I never guessed I lived in Denver. You know, this is a crazy, crazy experience. Life is a wild, wild ride, but God has such a great and beautiful plan for us that when we submit ourselves to it, it can just get so awesome, so much more awesome than we ever anticipated. Which is really, really beautiful. But okay, now I want to ask you a few random questions. So you are about to have a baby. What are you most looking forward to about having your son?
Oh, I just can't wait to squeeze him. I am so excited, sincerely, to receive God's love through my son. Like I feel like he's going to teach me so much about God's love for me. The way God loves, like, and just delighting in this little child. I think children teach us so much, and I think they're hilarious too. I can't wait for those times where he's just like really funny. But I'm most looking forward to that.
That's really amazing. What would you say, you know, 1 to 10 from super excited, you know, like you're going to the Holy Land being 10 to 1, just absolutely dreading it. How do we feel about delivery? How do we feel about giving birth?
Oh,
you feel like your heart's ready.
11. Yeah, I know. I was talking to some moms these past couple weeks, and they're like, "Are you okay? Like, why are you so excited about labor?" But I'm pumped. Okay, every married woman, engaged woman, anyone who wants to have children should read the book Made for This by Mary. I don't know how to say her last name. Hasteline. It has just fired me up about labor and has debunked so many lies or insecurities that I had going into having a child and being pregnant and thinking. I mean, I come from a background where it's just like, oh, I got to be tough and pain is weakness leaving the body, and just like these things where it's just now, which can be good in some sense, but it was like totally, yeah, I just had to like see the reality. Yeah. can be like very bad. And, like debunking that of being like, okay, I just want to know the reality of what's happening. And I think my birth is going to be very sanctifying for me because it was so distorted for me in my athletic career in college, and just this like tough nitty gritty girl that grew up with boys and a Marine dad too. like that all got stripped in a lot of ways when you're pregnant and had a lot of medical issues this past year. And now it's like, oh, we're going to get gritty again. And it's going to be to like bring forth life, which fires me up. So
pretty hyped.
I'm excited.
That's amazing. Are you team? This is a big debate amongst my friends. Are you team doula or no doula?
Ooh, I'm team doula, but I don't have a doula. So
gotcha. Okay.
I'm like for like supports in that, but I didn't like go forth the extra way to get one. I like really am confident in my husband being a hype man in the delivery room.
Yeah.
So what is your take on that?
That's amazing. I don't have like a hot take on doulas necessarily. We didn't get one. Which I think was like the debate between like we had a number of friends that did, a number of friends that didn't. So we just like, it's just a fun thing to talk about, I think, to see if people are, are pro doula or anti doula. All right. Now I'm not going to give you time to explain this fully, but this is another random, this could be a random, cause just could you maybe think of like debating hot topics of parenthood with friends. Are you team corporal punishment or not team corporal punishment as far as spanking?
Oh my gosh. That's a great question.
Some time to explain it. Obviously I'm not going to give you zero. It's not, we're not doing a fire round, but I just, we can't get into a 30 minute debate on it. Obviously we can save the debate for next time if we disagree.
I don't know if I have a solid answer to this. I'm kind of like backing out.
Emily and I are going to do a podcast on it, I think.
Really? Wow, so I can't wait to listen to it.
Undetermined. Do you know what Connor is? Where his stance is?
I'd say probably not spanking.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I would lean that way too, but I don't know.
That's amazing. Well, we will keep you in mind and strive to change your mind during our podcast.
Yeah, I want to hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah. We have lots of thoughts. That's something that I think is really fun to talk about. These are fun dinner party topics. You know, when you have couples over for dinner, just like ask them the most intimate parts of their lives. This is the kind of stuff.
Yeah, get
I
people
like
heated up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We have my sister-in-law and her husband, they like, when they have people over, they always like to ask, so what's like one of your hot takes? What's like your hottest take? That's like their conversation. And they do it with, neighbors, friends, like people that they don't know that well. They just get into it. Just like, what's your hottest take? And so I think corporal punishment can often be one of them. So that's fun. Well, that's great. Well, I'm excited to hear how it ends up going. Maybe you'll text me, in 10 years and be like, the third kid was just too wild. We had to do it.
That's so funny.
The third kid called for it. Yeah.
Really get you. Yeah. That's
amazing. Oh, this is another one. So last question. What your ideal number of children, breakdown of genders, what would it be? You get to pick.
Gosh.
Obviously, you're open to God's will. Every Catholic, always like, whatever God. And I'm like, I get that. But you get to pick. God comes down. He asks you, how many kids would you like to have? What would you like the breakdown to be?
I want so many freaking babies. When people ask me, I'm just like, keep me going until my body can't. when people ask me this, though, I say six. And I say five boys and one girl.
Wow.
And the girl being the youngest. I'm biased. I'm the youngest of three boys. And I love my childhood. And I love the way I was raised. That would be the breakdown.
That's amazing. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Erin. Great to have you. We're excited for your fourth episode already. Encourage people to go back and check out our second episode together. Because it was just a great conversation about healing and a number of different topics. Excuse me. But yeah, thank you so much for joining me today. And thanks for putting all this great content together and thinking about marriage on such a deep level. I'm so excited for you guys, and we'll be praying for you for sure. And so, anything else you want to share with the listeners?
No, Yeah, I'm so grateful for this. I can't wait for our parent episode when we're like, yeah, into That's this right. more. And I have a little bit. You'll have like a year and a half year old and yep. it'll be great. So.
Yep. Yeah, we'll see you back. We'll come back in a year and we'll see how the first year of motherhood. You'll have another 12 points for us. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I love it. Well, thanks so much, Erin.
Thank you.